Federal officials routinely cite the fact that they're dealing with taxpayer dollars. Well, what if 90% of Americans didn't pay income tax? The Progressive Consumption Tax Act is a proposal to completely overhaul the tax system. By taxing purchases instead of income, it's designed to encourage savings. But what would be the effect on federal revenues? In our congressional spotlight, Maryland Senator Ben Cardin walked me through his bill.
It's a progressive consumption tax, and by progressive consumption tax, we mean that we would be changing our income tax structure from using primarily income taxes, both corporate and personal income taxes, to one that's based partially on consumption taxes. Two principal goals here. One, to be fairer to middle-income families so that we would make sure that low-income, middle-income families would pay no more taxes than they're currently paying today. In some cases, they would pay less taxes. And secondly, we want this to be a pro-growth, simplified tax structure that will make America competitive for job growth. At the end of the day, we would have average tax rates that would be far lower than the industrial nations of the world, whereas today our income tax rates are among the highest in the marginal rates in the industrial world. So it's a way to sort of harmonize for global competition, simplify our tax code, and save middle-income families money and allow our economy to grow.
Now, when you say progressive value-added tax or progressive, how would that progressivity be expressed?
So let me go through some of the specifics. The tax rate on consumption of goods and services would be about 10%. Now, for low-income families, they would get rebates, so they would not pay that consumption tax. They would get rebates based upon their income and family size. The income tax, the personal income tax, would start at $100,000 of taxable income for families. So therefore, 90% of Americans would not have to pay income taxes. Personal income tax would be simplified. There would be four principal deductions for interest on your mortgage, charitable deductions. It includes state and local government taxes would be deductible, as well as what companies pay for health insurance and for retirement. The personal income tax rate, the highest rate would be 28%, substantially lower than the 39% under the current rates for incomes over $500,000. And then lastly, the corporate tax would be cut more than in half, down to 17% from its high today of 35%. All of that would give us, again, the lowest marginal rates. Lower-income families, middle-income families would get help because, first, they would not be subject to the income tax, but secondly, they would get a rebate based upon, again, family size and income from the consumption tax. Last point I want to make, the criticism has often been given from the more conservative elements that this would just produce more money for government. We put what's known as a circuit breaker in the law so that it would be capped at a certain amount of our economy. So we make sure that we don't have the unintended consequence of growing government.
Do you have a CBO score for what kind of revenue it would produce?
CBO has been helpful with us and Joint Tax in crafting the legislation. We filed the bill at the end of the last Congress. It's currently in the process of being scored. But we do have the experiences of other countries. Over 150 countries have imposed some form of a national consumption tax. So we do have pretty good information as to how this would work in practice.
I mean, as a practical matter, politically, I think people, even the conservative side, might support a consumption or value-added tax if the income tax went away totally, because I think the fear might be, well, you've got two levers now that can be pushed forward in the future.
Well, we have multiple levers today. I mean, we do have a corporate income tax. We have an individual income tax. We've got gasoline taxes. We've got payroll taxes. We've got all types of taxes. But what we're trying to do here is become competitive and to make tax compliance easier. Today, if you are an American manufacturer and you manufacture an automobile and you put that into the international marketplace, you got to pay the foreign taxes on that through the value-added tax. And yet, their products coming into the United States, their automobiles, they can take that tax off when it crosses the border. That puts America at a really strong competitive disadvantage. So the purpose here is to have a competitive tax code, a simplified tax code, but we also want to make sure it's fair to middle-income families. And therefore, we do need still to have an income tax. Otherwise, middle-income families would have to pay a lot more.
And I guess, but the upper-income families would also have the 10% sales tax on goods and services also?
Absolutely. And higher-income families will pay slightly more, but not much more. Remember, the highest marginal income tax rate would be at 28%. You add that to a 10% consumption tax, just to, if they spent everything, every dime they had, which is unlikely, then we're still at a lower marginal rate than we are today under the personal income tax of 39%. But this also rewards savings. So we don't tax savings and allows us to have greater capital formation here in the United States.
And what about the capital gains tax rate?
Well, we don't tax the growth of investment. So if it's strictly an investment growth, then that is not taxed. You can invest your money, you get the returns on your money, and it's not taxable. But what is taxable is the is solely your income. Now, there are other countries who have devised ways in which you can divide what is real services and what is real appreciation of assets, and we have those rules incorporated in our proposal.
Right, we're speaking with Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, and getting to the implementation side of this, should it be passed by the Congress and signed by the President, what would the IRS have to do? It seems like they would have to almost totally start from scratch in terms of their systems and processes.
Well, it would radically change the way that we have tax compliance in the United States. The only sympathetic argument I've heard against the bill are those who make their livelihood over the complexity of our tax code, that they may be more challenged as a result of simplifying the tax code. So the IRS will still have a function. We'll still be collecting revenues from various sources, so we'll still need the IRS, but it'll be a lot easier for taxpayers to be in compliance, and much fewer taxpayers will have direct contact with the IRS.
And so you envision this as when you check out of a store or buy a boat or whatever it might be, then an extra line would be on that that receipt for this, whatever the local sales tax is, plus the national tax.
Well, that's correct. As you buy consumer products, the cost, the consumption tax would be in that cost of that product. You would have a card that if you're entitled to rebates that would be swiped at the time you purchase a product that would have value on it based upon your income and family size, so that if you're entitled to rebates, you would get that rebate simultaneously with purchasing the product. So it would reflect the price without the consumption tax.
Would there be things that retailers would have to do, different equipment or different kinds of algorithms, or could this all be programmed, do you think, into the retail systems that exist now?
Well, exactly. It would be programmed into the way that retail sales are made. And because we're using a credit method, you would not pay more than once for the consumption tax. So that if you are a person who has purchased products that have the tax in it, but then resell, you're entitled to a credit for the consumption taxes that you've paid.
Have you talked to the luxury goods segment of the economy? If you're buying, say, a Cessna Citation for $3 million, would that have the same national tax of 10% as, say, a pack of gum?
Well, it would. The answer is that it absolutely would. And that's, of course, one of the reasons why this proposal is fairer to middle-income families. Middle-income families don't have the same discretion in how they spend their money. They basically spend close to 100% of their earnings because that's what they need to do. This would obviously reward savings, but would also be fairer to those families in the amount of taxes that they pay. Higher income families have a lot more discretion as to how they wish to handle their income. But let me tell you something. Someone who can afford a $1 million product is probably making multi-millions of dollars. And if they are not, they probably use shelters in our tax code, even though we've tried to eliminate it. But they could be paying as high as 39% on their income. So having that reduced to 28%, their savings on that, and if they do buy these luxury products, yes, they would pay the 10%.
Once we get past this whole homeland security debate and something happens one way or another, maybe at the end of another short CR, there's some kind of agreement and it passes. What are the next priorities for the Senate? I mean, what are your priorities after we get past this current kind of explosion?
There are many issues we need to take up. We've heard in this debate the need for immigration reform, and I strongly agree. We need comprehensive immigration reform. The United States Senate in the last Congress passed a comprehensive bipartisan immigration reform bill. It's time that the Congress sent to the President a bipartisan, real reform of our immigration system. But we also have to get on with the budget. We need to pass next year's budget, and we need to do that in an orderly way that allows for the funding of the critical responsibilities of government and funds it in a direct way. We also need to pass a long-term transportation reauthorization bill so that we can modernize our roads, our bridges, our transit systems. That needs to get done. We need an energy policy for this country. We've been talking about this for a while, but we need to figure out how we're going to handle our long-term energy developments, and I hope that'll be more in clean energy sources. So there's a lot of issues that we need to move forward, but the bottom line, Congress needs to be a constructive player in creating a stronger economy, more jobs, and better paying jobs.
Now, in Maryland, the NIH has just released its 500-page plan for redoing its campus, getting down to really a micro-level issue. But they're talking about the possibility of 17 new buildings and so forth over the next 20 years at a cost of around $5 billion. NIH is a big economic driver for Maryland, and it also has a lot of leverage on national affairs. And so have you seen that, and is that something you would support as time goes forward?
I have seen it, and I strongly support it. NIH is not just a Maryland treasure, and it is a Maryland treasure. It's a magnet for our economic growth. It creates many jobs and it brings some of the highest trained people to our region. So it is a huge driver of our economy. It's a national treasure. It's a global treasure. The work being done at NIH is saving lives every day. People who have no other hope come to NIH to get their medical needs analyzed and hopefully treated. We are discovering ways to save lives in the future. We're developing the vaccine to deal with Ebola. We're developing the vaccine to deal with influenza. All that work's being done at NIH, which is helping quality of life, create jobs here, and keep America at the cutting edge of medical research.
And there's another issue that partially affects Maryland, but also is national, and that is something the president proposed, reorganizing, and this comes up perennially, reorganizing the food inspection and safety apparatus such that what the Agriculture Department does and what the FDA does are consolidated in some kind of an agency that would be HHS, which mitigates toward the FDA side. Do you see any chance of this happening in the next session?
Well, we are reorganizing the federal government to be more efficient, and Maryland plays a key role in that. The FDA campus in our state is modernizing, expanding, providing service on our food supply, dealing with new challenges such as tobacco. There's a lot of exciting things that are happening in public health and in food safety issues and drug safety issues, and we were doing it in a way that is safer to our consumers and easier for America to compete globally for this incredibly important activity for our people.
But what about combining what agriculture does in the food area with FDA and resulting new agency would be part of HHS. That's what the president specifically proposed. Do you see that happening or being taken
up?
Well,
I think for Maryland, we're well situated. We, of course, have the ag labs here. We have the FDA here. We already have a very strong presence in both agriculture and food safety. So I think a more efficient operation will benefit not only the people of America, but will benefit our local economy.
And what about the commerce-related agencies, the Ex-Im Bank and so on? There's five or six of them. I think the OPIC is another one. One of the proposals in the 2016 budget is to combine all of those in a kind of new commerce department. So all the business-related, business development-related functions of the government would be under one umbrella. Is that
something
you see happening?
I applaud the president for his visionary way of making government more efficient. I think we all support that. Now, obviously, the devil's in the details, and we need to make sure that as we do this, important functions of international commerce, important functions of small business growth, important functions of commerce growth here in the United States are given the type of priority it needs. But I think as you consolidate, you coordinate, you save resources, and you make America more competitive, and you provide the services to the people of this country in a more efficient way. There are goals I think we all want to see achieved.
Maryland Senator Ben Cardin is my guest. And what about the Secret Service? That's another government management issue that got up to the congressional level and some pretty serious issues there. Now there's a person named for the permanent who comes from the long-term social Secret Service community. What's your feeling there?
Of course, Secret Service comes under Homeland Security, so it first would be nice to have a long-term budget to meet their needs, and I'd hold that up along with so many other of our Homeland Security appropriations because of immigration issues. But the Secret Service has a long history, a very proud tradition of defending the president and defending the critical assets of our country. They have dedicated men and women who serve in the Secret Service, who literally put their lives on the line in order to protect our country and the institutions of our country. They've had issues of late. There's no question. There have been lapses, which are unacceptable. So we want to make sure that we provide them the tools that they need in order to carry out their critical mission for our country.